Hello, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Rita Dunaway, here in the studio with my co-host, Dean Welty, and today we're starting a three-part series that has to do with the Supreme Court, the Constitution, and the rule of law. For our first installment today, we're going to give you an update on a couple of Supreme Court cases that we have featured on past programs. The court has now handed down its decision on these cases, so we want to talk about how they came out and what will happen next. That's today's program. Then for next week's program, we're going back to basics, Dean. We'll do a little refresher course on the Constitution and talk about some of the portions of it that have been the most subject to abuse, as well as how we can go about correcting the damage that has been done to our federal system through perversion of constitutional language. And then finally, for the third installment of the series on the Supreme Court, the Constitution, and the rule of law, we'll talk about the confirmation hearings underway for President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And then we're going to look at the questions that should be asked of every prospective American judge. Dean, it seems a little bit daunting. It seems like a tall order. What do you think? Can we do it in three programs?
Well, Rita, it is a tall order. But I think we need to acknowledge at the outset why we're doing this three-part series. We are deeply concerned about the attacks that are being leveled against our freedoms of speech and of religious expression. They are considered to be the most important of our freedoms from the time of our earliest settlers, and they are enshrined in the First Amendment of our Constitution. Yet, they are at risk today. And just to reinforce that, I'll cite the words of Ronald Reagan when he warned in 1961 that freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for our children to do the same. Or one day, we will spend our sunset years telling our children what it was like in the United States when men were free. That is a warning that we need to take very, very seriously.
Yeah, and you know, I want to make one more comment before we get into the specifics of the cases. The similarity, well, there are a lot of similarities in these two cases, but the overwhelming one for me is that both of these two cases we're going to discuss involve the element of coercion. We're not talking about people of faith not being able to do something that they want to do, which would be bad enough when it comes to freedom of religious exercise. We're talking in both of these cases about people of faith being coerced by the government to do something or to say something that is absolutely repugnant to their faith.
And Rita, this is on top of coercion to be silent about the things that they believe. So one is to be silent in doing something that violates your belief. The other is to be forced to be silent about things that you do believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's jump right into the cases, Dean. We want to revisit two cases, as I mentioned, that we discussed on the program back when they were still pending before the Supreme Court. The first one is Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission. This was a critical case in deciding the future of religious freedom in this new era of sexual liberty and same-sex marriage. Dean, remind everyone briefly, if you would, what this case was all about.
Well, Rita, the lawsuit stems from Colorado's public accommodations law. Most states have one of these statutes in place. They preclude businesses that are generally open to the public from discriminating against customers based on certain characteristics. Now, that list of protected characteristics varies from state to state, but the most common ones, and really of some long standing, are race, sex, national origin, and religion. But in recent years, some states, including Colorado, have added sexual orientation and gender identity to this list of protected characteristics.
We could do a whole program about that, but go on.
Well, on this particular case, when Jack Phillips refused to bake a wedding cake for Charlie Craig and David Mullins, they were the two men who turned to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission claiming that Jack Phillips had denied them full and equal enjoyment of his bakery services because of their sexual orientation. Well, the commission agreed with them, and the Colorado State Court of Appeals unanimously affirmed a finding that Jack Phillips had discriminated based upon sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm. Well, surely, if freedom of speech and religious exercise mean anything, they mean that the law cannot compel a person to use his artistic skill to promote what he believes is wrong, right? I mean, that's the way it struck me. The lower court's ruling, though, effectively declawed the lions of liberty, which once were the free speech and free exercise clauses of the First Amendment. And you know, Dean, throughout the legal proceedings on this case, some people focused on whether third-party observers, say wedding celebration guests, would perceive the cake as Jack's personal endorsement of the wedding, whether the cake was really his expression in that sense. But that really misses the essential point. And it's a fundamental misunderstanding of the nature of sincere, conscience-based objections. Because the issue for Jack isn't what will other people think of this cake. The issue for Jack is his allegiance to his Creator and his obedience to the laws of nature and of nature's God.
And Rita, we may be getting into this, but just to be clear, it wasn't the sexual orientation that caused Jack Phillips to deny his services. Mm-hmm. It was because of the celebration of the wedding that caused him to make that. It's an important distinction because he had served these two men for years.
It's the message, not the person who's the customer. Yeah, and we'll talk about that more.
Well, Rita, so let's get to the finish line here. What did the court decide?
Well, the Supreme Court ruled that Colorado had violated Jack's right to freely exercise his religion because the state had demonstrated blatant hostility toward Jack's faith throughout the proceedings. The biggest example of this, and, you know, this I just find outrageous, while Jack's case was pending before the Colorado Commission, the commission ruled that three secular bakeries did not discriminate when they refused a Christian customer's request for cakes criticizing same-sex marriage on religious grounds. You know, what about what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right?
What about hypocrisy?
Right. What about that? Well, as an aside here, the commission was right in those cases, because those bakeries weren't refusing to serve Christians. They were refusing to promote a message that they abhor. That right is and must be protected by the First Amendment, not just for some, but for all, including white Christian men like Jack.
Well, and we're really getting back to fairness and equal treatment under the law.
Right.
So Colorado applied one law for secular bakers and a different rule for Christian bakers.
Exactly. So, Dean, people say, well, was this a great decision? What are the implications of the Supreme Court decision? And I'd say it's a mixed bag decision for this reason. It came out the right way for Jack. There's no doubt the court's ruling was correct. But because of the blatant hostility that was involved in Jack's case, the ruling really doesn't appear to be cast broadly enough that it is a guarantee that religious exercise and rights of conscience will be generally protected in the future against coercion pursuant to these so-called non-discrimination laws. The fact that this ruling was based on the state's specifically and blatantly hostile treatment of Jack is seen as possibly limiting its application in other situations. So in other words, it was a good decision, but we'll have to wait and see how broad its application will go.
Well, and Rita, if I'm correct, I understand that the persecution of Jack continues. Is that right?
Yes. Within a month, Dean, of the Supreme Court's decision, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission was added again. It found that Jack's Masterpiece Cake Shop had violated the same law again by refusing to bake a cake celebrating a person called Autumn Scardina's coming out as transgender on her birthday. Scardina requested a cake with a blue exterior and a pink interior to celebrate a sex change from male to female.
Well, then, Rita, do you think it was just a coincidence that Scardina had called Masterpiece Cake Shop to order this particular cake the very same day in 2017 that the Supreme Court announced it would determine whether Colorado could force Jack to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding ceremony? Coincidence?
I think not, Dean. I think this is just persecution. This is people jumping on, piling on to make a point.
Well, poor Jack Phillips. That's all I can say at this point. How did Masterpiece Cake Shop respond to that?
Admirably.
Wow.
Jack's staff calmly informed Scardina that Masterpiece Cake Shop would not bake the sex change celebration cake because that message conflicted with the owner's Christian worldview. As Christians, they believe that a person's sex is an immutable biological reality determined by God. And the result of that, of course, was that Scardina ran and filed the discrimination charges.
Well, Rita, my curiosity mounts.
Okay.
Of course, it is wrong in America for anyone to be coerced to participate in the celebration of a lifestyle that his faith condemns. But is the Colorado Civil Rights Commission getting its legal analysis right? Because I understand that the Colorado non-discrimination law protects people from discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. Is that right?
Well, the commission's report on this incident is quick to point out that Scardina is a member of a protected class under the statute based on both sex and transgender status, because that's gender identity. So, Dean, what do you think about that?
Wow.
We started with a white male.
It seems like he has a slam dunk case. He is protected because he is now a female.
Yep.
And he is protected because he is transgender and he's got this sexual gender identity claim.
Yep.
So what's the problem with that, Rita?
Well, I want to be clear on this as far as the legal analysis. And you alluded to this earlier, and it was exactly on point. Right. Masterpiece Cake Shop did not, in this case with Autumn Scardina, nor in the one considered by the Supreme Court with the same-sex marriage celebration cake, the cake shop did not deny anyone the full and equal enjoyment of services provided to other customers, because the bakery does not create custom cakes for same-sex wedding ceremonies or cakes for sex change celebrations, regardless of whether the customer is a member of a protected class or not. So, in other words, Dean, the pivotal question the Civil Rights Commission should have asked is this: would you have provided this service to a straight white male customer?
The service being baking a cake.
Baking the cake to celebrate the same-sex wedding.
Yes.
So, for instance, let's say the father of one of the men getting married in this same-sex wedding celebration was the customer. But the father himself, let's say he's a straight white male, Jack still would have refused to bake the cake because he's not discriminating against the customer based on who they are. He's refusing to promote a message. So that should be the way the analysis goes.
Well, we talked about poor Jack Phillips.
Yeah.
The case continuing of persecution against him because of his faith. Well, Rita, I am glad to announce that there's been a new development in this case.
Yep.
Jack has now turned the tables on the commission by filing a federal lawsuit against them.
That's right.
Now, what are his grounds for filing this lawsuit?
Well, there are several claims made, but the most significant ones are that the state of Colorado violated Jack's religious freedom by targeting him, showing hostility toward him, and discriminating against him, as we've already discussed, based on his religious beliefs and practices. He's also arguing, Dean, that the government violated his 14th Amendment right to equal protection by treating his religiously motivated decision differently from secular motivated decisions. And we've already talked about how that played out. It's all over the record. It's very clear. I think he has a really strong case.
Once upon a time, long, long ago, I saw a movie that incorporated dueling banjos. It sounds like that's what we have going here, dueling lawsuits. Do you think this will go to the Supreme Court?
I think it's very likely it could end up there.
Both cases?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
Well, so everybody stay tuned for future updates in this court battle. But Rita, let's go on to a second case. We need to update our listeners on the case of National Institute for Family and Life Advocates, NIFLA. This is the one involving a California law aimed at faith-based pregnancy centers that exist to encourage and support women facing unexpected pregnancies. Now, as our listeners may recall, this law, this California law, required these centers, which exist to affirm life, that they must also post notices telling these vulnerable women where they can go to get a free, low-cost abortion. So, again, this was all about free speech, wasn't it?
Yeah, free speech and compelled speech.
Yes.
This is precisely what is known in First Amendment law as compelled speech. It is the blunt force of law applied to coerce private citizens or groups to say exactly what the government wants them to say. Does that sound like something that should happen in a free nation?
Well, if you can say that a Christian pastor should also be in charge of a Wiccans, the Wiccans meetings, the witchcraft meetings. He should be compelled to do that.
Crazy.
Maybe that's an overstretch, but it sounds very parallel,
right.
Compelled speech.
Yeah, it is. It is similar. Yeah, it's antithetical to free speech, and it's a brazen affront to liberty. So several of the affected pregnancy centers in California took this argument to court, but a federal district court and our favorite, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, rejected their free speech claims. The Ninth Circuit ruled that because this law regulates what they deem professional speech, it can be subjected to a lower level of legal scrutiny. The court went on to find that the law withstands that lower scrutiny because it was based on the state's concern that some women who visit pregnancy centers may not be aware of the state-funded abortion option. Again, we could do a whole other program on that. But Dean, the Ninth Circuit was just wrong. This lower scrutiny professional speech standard may be appropriate if you're talking about regulations that require doctors and other healthcare professionals to advise their patients of specific risks that accompany specific medical procedures they are about to perform. That's what we know as informed consent, and that makes sense. But requiring these counselors, caregivers, to inform a woman who has not come to undergo a risk-laden medical procedure that she could choose to have a risk-laden procedure to end the life of another human being is altogether different, and frankly, it's outrageous to try to put the two on the same footing.
Well, just as another example, Rita, one has to wonder what could come next. Will California now also require marriage counselors to tell couples where they can get a low-cost divorce? Or why not require oncologists to inform every terminally ill patient upon delivering the diagnosis that physician-assisted suicide is available just around the corner?
Yeah.
So how did the Supreme Court decide this case, Rita?
Well, thankfully, the Supreme Court ruled that this California law did violate the First Amendment by forcing these pregnancy centers to express a message that they did not want to express, and that in fact directly conflicted with the life-affirming message they did want to express. So this decision really was an overwhelming victory, not just for pro-lifers, but for everyone who cares about preserving the right to freedom of speech.
Well, Rita, all I can say about these two cases, I am so grateful for organizations like Alliance Defending Freedom, which was involved in both of these cases. And I think Mike Ferris argued the case before the Supreme Court.
He did argued the pregnancy center case before the Supreme Court.
Yes. And there are other organizations. There is First Liberty in Texas. There is Liberty Council. There is the American Center for Law and Justice. Thomas More. There are just so many wonderful organizations that have stepped up to the plate to defend the rights and freedoms of Christians and other faith-based organizations.
Yeah, I am so grateful for those organizations, Dean, and I would just encourage our listeners to be actively supporting them in prayer, for those who can with their financial support, because keep in mind that these organizations provide, I don't know how much in cost, but certainly in the, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for some of these big, high-profile Supreme Court cases. They provide all of those legal services free of charge to people who are being persecuted. People like Jack, like, you know, we've talked before about Baron L. Stutzman.
Yes.
and the florists and the photographers who really are having their entire livelihood threatened by this push to, you know, make sure everyone does the same thing and acts the same way. And for heaven's sake, don't let anyone's feelings be hurt because someone says they disagree with the message.
Well, Rita, we have a minute left, so I want to raise one more case in California again.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my, California. There is a case that has just come to light. It was a case that the legislators actually had already approved a law that would have made it a crime to provide counselors for people who wanted to leave their homosexual lifestyle. Mm-hmm. That law had passed the Assembly. It had passed the Senate. It was ready for the governor's signature. And on the last day, the sponsor of the law pulled the bill. Can you guess why he would have had that change of heart?
Well, I happen to know why, but can I be the one to
Please.
Tell everyone? It was because a group of pastors went and talked to the sponsor of this bill about the bill and how it would affect all the, you know, even pastors, faith-based counselors. This law forbade them. It made it an unfair trade practice, Dean, for them to counsel a person who came to them saying, you know, I have same-sex attraction. I don't want to have same-sex attraction. I want to, you know, proceed with the biblical understanding of marriage and family life. Can you help me? This bill would have made it illegal for those people to provide that counseling. It's just absolutely insane.
Well, and Rita, I think we can draw a lesson from this. we don't always have to go to court.
That's right.
And particularly because courts in the past have been quite unfriendly. And I am so grateful that we see a fresh wind blowing in the Supreme Court, that they could really honor and respect these First Amendment guarantees to protect our freedoms of speech and religious expression. So that it is a lesson for us that we the people and we the church need to take a stand, and hopefully by, I love this quote from Scripture, hopefully by our well-doing we can put to silence the ignorance of foolish men.
That is a challenge. One. Yeah, and you know, I just want to bring up one other example of the kind of thing you're talking about, and we did a program on this a while back too, but remember the abortion clinic in Maryland, and how a group of pro-lifers had prayed and, you know, protested and done everything they could for years to counter the influence of that abortion clinic in their community. And finally, they ended up purchasing the building where that clinic was housed, and were able, just through those ordinary means, to get this clinic out of their community. And you know, it's just things like that are just so encouraging to see. And these pastors, I hope every pastor listening to this program will be encouraged to use their voice. You know, there's nothing prohibiting pastors and people of faith from using their influence to direct our public officials toward godly, constitutional, good public policy.
Well, Rita, we can cite two instances here in Harrisonburg where we had three SOBs doing active business. These are the sexually oriented businesses, the porn shops. The people rose up against that, and now we have none because the people went to the city council asking them to regulate, ban or regulate the time, manner, and place of activity of these perverse businesses. As in the second case, there was a sex trafficking and porn shop located on South Main Street. People found out about it. They were one of those that went out of business, and they have been replaced by New Creation, which is a defender of women who get involved in sex trafficking. We call it the ultimate makeover. And it's just another example where we, the people, need to take this responsibility to make a difference. Well, Rita, it's been a big topic. We have two more coming up. Next week, we'll talk about the Constitution and its importance in America. And then the week after that, we'll be talking about the nomination to the Supreme Court of Brett Kavanaugh, which is, of course, very much in the news today. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. If you would like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to our website, valleyfamilyforum.org, and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We also want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway, but also to so many of you for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you would like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads, P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22803. I'm Dean Welty with Rita Dunaway and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Until then, have a great week putting your faith into action.
Rejoice, 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 rej